Hello and welcome to the Monster Sci-Fi Show. I am your host, the Monster Sci-Fi, from a certain point of view. That's my catchphrase. And no one else can say that but me. Right, Mr. Gene? I'm sure he's listening somewhere. So, welcome to another week of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast, which is now 3 weeks in a row. Can you imagine that? Before, you would have to wait months to get a new episode, but now you got weeks. Almost every week, we're getting something out, so that's good news. So, I'm going to start off a bit on a little bit of a downer with the DC controversy with the new Batgirl cover with the Joker. And then, on a lighter note, talk about the upcoming robot apocalypse, and then end with a discussion about iZombie and some other shows that I've been catching up on. So, let's start off with the Debbie Downer. This past week was okay for the most part, but my car had just pretty much died yesterday. And so I was really kind of bummed out that this had happened, because now I have to now look for a new car. But, you know, I tried to look for the silver lining in this whole mess, because things happen. That's what life is all about. So what was interesting, I kept running my head, and also was this, in Batman Begins, the quote that Thomas Wayne said to Bruce, you know, "Why do we fall, Bruce? So we learn how to pick ourselves up." So doing this podcast is basically picking myself up. So rather than wallow in despair and so forth, for right now, I'm in a happy place to talk to you. Even if it's just me listening to myself on this podcast. But I'm sure you guys are listening. So again, I take solace in that. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is that DC cover in which the Joker has Batgirl, the new Batgirl, kind of in a hold. He has one arm draped over her left shoulder with the gun pointing down. And then the other arm is kind of like, where his hand is like near her face, kind of like putting out a smear of blood on her face from her lips to the side of her cheek. And she has another one on the other side of the cheek. So it looks like this weird smile that he would have with his makeup. And then you can see Batgirl is really disturbed. She's really upset. She's really scared. You can see a tear coming down her eye. And I guess when this cover came out or was about to be released, there was a big uproar about this. Now, I'm going to say this with a caveat of it's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Meaning, I as a comic book fan didn't really take offense to that. On the other hand, I understand the significance and the imagery and what it feels or portrays to people that are in that situation. I'm talking just about women, but people in general, if they're in that situation, it kind of glorifies that. But let's take this in perspective. This is a comic book. This is a comic book that the artist Albuquerque paid homage to The Killing Joke, which is a graphic novel done back in the late 80s by Alan Moore, who also did The Watchmen, in which the Joker did a heinous act. You know, he shot Barbara Gordon, and as such made her paralyzed, and later on she became Oracle and so forth. So, in fairness, if this exact same pose was not the Joker, but, I don't know, the Riddler or the Penguin, it would not have the same impact. So let's be fair on that. The Joker is a psychopath. Really, really screwed up. He's maniacal. That's who he is. So, for people to get upset about what's going on, remember, this is a comic book. You don't like the comic book, you don't like the cover, that is your prerogative. You know, I'm not going to get on the pulpit here and just start preaching out how this is, you know, freedom of speech, and everyone has a right to portray things, however. But let's look at an instance, you know, a couple of months ago with the Charlie Hebdo situation, which is the French satirical weekly magazine in which they made fun of the Prophet Muhammad and so forth, and people took offense to that. And yes, that's the far extreme in which people did get killed. But here in this situation, you know, people took to Twitter and to social media to bring up this issue of what was being done. Now, being that DC is in the business to make money, because of all this controversy now, DC is going to be making money. If no one said anything, it would have gone pretty much unnoticed. It would have sold whatever copies. But in fairness, now you made it much more than what it should be. I get it. You want to bring light to this issue. You want to talk about how women are being portrayed in this situation. And how is a sense of violence towards women in that situation. How it dehumanizes them and so forth, making them powerless. Fine, I get it. But it's a double-edged sword. They have a right to do what they want, but they're not, and I repeat, they're not free from the consequences, which is what the tweets and the backlash from the public is about. Again, from a certain perspective, I don't see a problem with it. I'm not crazy about the new Batgirl because I read one of the new comics. I'm like, it's not for me. So honestly, I couldn't have cared less until this came across, you know, during the week in which this happened. So, again, from your perspective, it all depends on how you think about that subject. So, everyone has a right to like what they like, say what they say, and do what they want. But again, no one's free from the consequences of that. Alright, so, on a lighter note, let's go into the robot, supposedly, protest that happened at the South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas. So the article I think that I was reading was from CNN talking about how this rally was pretty much fake. Whether it was fake or not, that is not the issue. The matter at hand is that I think we do need to have some type of conversation in this. Meaning, we become really dependent on technology. How many times when you meet someone that asks you for your telephone number, do you automatically remember your own cell phone number? Or in my case, I can't remember my mom's telephone number unless I have it pre-programmed in my phone and then do the speed dial. I can't remember that for my life of me. So I'm dependent on my phone, that technology, to help me through. Now, of course, that's just a small example, but, you know, my phone also has Siri. If you have a Windows phone, it has Cortana. So we would have these virtual assistants that, if we can program to, they can help us become more productive, help us in our day-to-day lives. I, for one, and I would love to have this become a reality, in the Total Recall, the first one, not the remake crap, in which Schwarzenegger gets into a Johnny Cab, and these Johnny Cabs are pretty much an automated car that will drive you wherever you want to go. And in this case, the actor that voiced Johnny Cab was Robert Picardo, who was from Star Trek Voyager. He played the hologram doctor, so just a little tidbit there. So, the reason why I bring that up, because my commute, even though it's not that long, you know, it's like less than 20 miles. But it really takes a toll on me, psychologically wise, just dealing with traffic. You know, having to leave extra early, having to deal with the traffic because you never know what's going to happen, and find multiple ways of how to get to the exact same place because it's nuts. So I'd rather take that burden off me, put that into the Google car that's going to be coming out soon, and then better come out soon, because I really would love that feature. Why? So I can read in the car. I can listen to music. I can feel relaxed. I can have that burden taken away from me. But that's where we get the inherent danger of becoming too reliant on that situation. What if we start doing this and we forget how to drive? Do we do need to have a license because everything is now automated? You know, it does open up a can of worms that we do need to address, because it leads to other things. Yes, robots do, you know, steal old people's medicine and use it for fuel, which is an old SNL reference if anyone gets it. But there was this one quick video in which, I guess it was some kind of amusement park, in which someone dressed up as a robot was coming out and was kind of doing a little song and dance number. And then some guy came along and got in the robot's face and then, like, wanted to fight the robot. And then security came in and stopped the fight, arrested the guy, and then that was it. And I posted that on my Facebook page, and it was funny because, you know, I mentioned this is, like, the first, you know, sense of the impending war that's going to be coming, you know, a la Terminator, so and so forth. And my friend Connie, hi Connie, was talking about this. So she was talking about, was this a war or a dance-off? So then I wrote back, and this is a cue from the coming apocalypse, from a song, Men Without Hats, The Safety Dance. They knew what was coming, and their lyrics could not be more true. We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Because if your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, then there are no friends of mine. Because probably they're robots, and they can't dance. So that's your first clue. If you see someone who looks like they're human, and they can't dance, that's a robot. That's who we gotta kill. Just FYI. And besides, the only robot that I saw that was actually could dance was on a Graham Norton show like a couple of weeks back, and it was doing Gangnam Style. But it was only, like, what, less than a foot tall, so just knock it over. There. Apocalypse averted. So, fight for your right to party. I don't know. Basically, talk about this. Think about it. Let me know what you think, because honestly, it's going to be coming one day. We might as well start getting geared up for it. All right. The last part I wanted to talk about was iZombie. My friend Alex, hi Alex, thanks for responding to my post on Facebook, had also enjoyed iZombie, and he thought it was going to be at first cheesy, but he liked the characters enough. I also thought it was going to be kind of like, not a Veronica Mars, but kind of like a teen girl, high school-ish, who just happened to be infected, and her teen angst and all that. Thank God that was not the case. Thinking about it, it's more like watching Buffy. Not that it was Buffy-like, but she has now powers. Because she didn't get bitten, she got scratched, she now is part of the undead, but still has to eat brains in order to curb or suppress the hunger. Which is cool, because what happened is that as she's eating the brain, she's starting to get visions of the person that is now deceased. And then, in this case, because she worked in the morgue, it was a case that was going on, and she was able to help solve the case in that. And was able to take on a certain trace of the person that was dead, as well as having a little bit more strength than the average person, basically. So I thought that was kind of cool, and that's very much like Buffy in a sense of, you know, that human aspect with now powers. And I thought, this is really cool. I really, really enjoy this tremendously. Like, I had fun. And it's not just because it's a clever premise, which is. But there was a lot of humor in it. A lot of references to other zombie movies, which I love. You don't get that. I mean, yes, I love The Walking Dead. I love that it's really dark and really gross all at the same time. But I also love crap like Zombieland, which they put so much humor and the zombies. That's great. But Amazon tried to make that into a TV series, and that failed because they put a new component in there, and it was just not funny. Some bits were, but this is what I've been wanting to see, is some kind of humor injected into this, you know, dark storyline of zombies. And it's a fresh take, basically. So I'm glad that that's happening. Now, the one thing that I noticed, one of the actresses who was Her name is Molly Hagen. And I'm like, why does she look familiar? And I'm like, oh, that's Stavorda from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. She was the very first one. And she was the female Vorta that Sisko and I think Quark was there that encountered her the first time. And I'm like, but back in running my head, I was thinking Gail Edwards, who was Dot from It's a Living, from a show that was way back in the 80s. So I was always getting the two of them confused. But I'm just like, why does she look familiar? Oh, that's Dot from Gail Edwards from It's a Living, and then getting her confused with DS9. So they're two separate people in my head. But in any case, that's just me nerding out, because I'm like, I like when I see past actors or actresses did something that was previous that I liked. In fact, the actress who was playing the lead did the early Hercules movies, the Legend Continues, the one with Kevin Sorbo. So she did the first three movies and I think one or two episodes of the regular series, and then one and the Xena spinoff. So that was great. You know, she's Australian. Can't tell from her accent, which is even better, because I love actors that really give good American accents without having to, like Jamie Bamber, who played Apollo in BSG, could never tell that he was British, and when he's talking in his normal language, or his normal, dialect, I'm like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, oh, that's, he speaks like that. It's just he's doing the accent. The American one for us, so. All right. So, Alex did mention that he had been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have also been watching it. He is kind of, like, done with Sky to a degree, because she's gone kind of annoying. She has been, since the recap or the re-continuing of the series after the break, it's more focused on her. I get it. It's a struggle. But honestly, the whole inhuman aspect is the reason why I'm getting excited about it. I'm kind of being patient on this. And besides, we got Avengers 2 coming up. So, kind of like what happened in the season 1 lull in the very beginning, things did not pick up until the events from Avengers, from Captain America 2 happened, that stuff went down and it was great to watch. So I'm hoping that is what's going to happen with S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2. Alright, so Flash, fantastic. Pretty much every single episode has been great, and the next episode even better. This last episode, which I'm not going to talk about it in details, was the best episode so far, because a lot has happened and there's lots of payoffs to get to this point. And I'm really excited by what is going to supposedly happen in the next couple of weeks. If you have not watched The Flash, please, I highly, highly encourage you to watch this. And Alex also agrees that he likes The Flash a lot. He loved that last episode. It was by far one of my favorites. And even though at times they're like, oh, they're going down that whole emotional buddy-buddy, father and son, when they have to do really heartfelt stuff, actually, I do get that feeling that it is heartfelt, and it's not being played on over and over again, because they do put it in, and they're out. And then they go into the good stuff with the action scenes, which are phenomenal. So I thank you guys for doing a great job on The Flash, and I just cannot wait for this to continue. And Arrow has been great. Hasn't been kind of like top-notch yet for this season, because it's kind of a weird pacing of what's going on, because we got Adam going on. Roy, to me, this whole season has been kind of like lost, because he's kind of like the second banana to Arrow. And except for the one or two episodes in which he takes the lead, and there was one or two and that same episodes, one of the best fight choreographies and camera work that I've seen in a very long time. I was very impressed with it. So he was given his little moment to shine, and it was fantastic. And then when Arrow comes back, Oliver comes back, he's back into, like, I'll just follow what you guys are doing. So his character basically is supportive and nothing more. Just kind of like Diggle is now even one step behind Roy, which I hate that because he was great, you know, doing the lead for the Suicide Squad, and now he's also kind of like lost. So if they're ever going to do, if they're going to do a TV version of this Suicide Squad, fine, I'm happy with that. But of course, I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, DC made it clear what happens on the movies, it's not going to happen in the TV series. So we're looking at multiple universe, multiple storylines, they don't cross. So fine, just leave it at that. So so we talked about iZombie, we talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we talked about Flash, we talked about Arrow, of course, the Robot Apocalypse and a DC cover. I think that calls it a night. I think that's enough. So send me your comments and concerns or questions to my email at monstersci-fi-show@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, MONSTERSYFYSHOW. So that's the Monster Sci-Fi Show, spelled the Siffy way. And, of course, you can find my Facebook page, The Monster Sci-Fi Show, where? On Facebook. Ah, imagine that. So now, this officially ends the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. And remember, it's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night, everyone. Speak to you next week.